Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to the State of Florida Sports Podcast, presented by the USA Today Network. Here's your host, Tim Walters.
When it came time for their pick at number 17, the Jacksonville Jaguars had plenty of top-notch options because of a run on quarterbacks early in the draft. They took advantage of that fact by trading the pick to Minnesota in exchange for the number 23 pick. There, they took Brian Thomas Jr., the electric wide receiver who played for LSU last season. The Jaguars went into the draft with 8 picks, but they came away with 9. Who did they take, and how did they do? To grade each pick and give us his thoughts, I welcome back longtime Florida Times Union columnist Gene Frenette. Gene's been covering this team since before they even played a game, so he knows what he's talking about. He'll be here in just a moment to share his wealth of knowledge. Hello again, everybody. I'm Tim Walters, and thank you once again for joining me on the State of Florida Sports Podcast, powered by the USA Today Network. We recently named the number one sports podcast in the state by Feedspot.com. Thank you to Feedspot. As always, this podcast utilizes our Florida Sports Network of beat writers, columnists, and some special guests to bring you up to speed on the most important sports topics. Our Florida network consists of 17 news sites that encompass the state. We encourage you to subscribe to your hometown newspaper, and of course this podcast, to help support the incredible journalism done by our talented staffs. Gene Frenette has been the constant voice of praise and criticism of the Jaguars for almost 30 years. Let's welcome him in now. Gene, welcome back to the podcast.
Good to be here, Tim.
All righty, let's talk some draft. When it came time for the Jags on Thursday night, just about 10 p.m., word came in that we'd have to wait a little bit more because they moved down from 17 to 23 with the Minnesota Vikings. They also got a fifth-round pick and a couple of 2025 picks in exchange. So did you like the trade, or what did you think of the move down? And what do you think of Thomas, the electric wide receiver from LSU?
Well, for starters, I advocated more of a, even before the draft, I advocated more of a trade down than I did a trade up. I think going up, when you're talking about going from mid-first round to, you know, whether it's 12 or whether it's even into the top 10, maybe to grab one of the top three receivers, the price was going to be too much. I mean, you're probably going to have to sacrifice your second round pick, knowing that you needed, you know, between cornerback and receiver, you knew you had big time needs at both of those spots. Well, if you trade up, then you're into the top 10 or even going from like 17 to 12, let's say. You would have probably had to sacrifice your second round pick. So, you know, I was not in favor of doing that. Trading down can be a good thing. It turned out to be a really good thing for the Jaguars last year. And it turned out to be a really good thing this year, because you went from 17 to 23. You picked up two mid round draft picks next year. Plus you got an extra fifth rounder this year, which turned out to be Keelan Robinson. So you like that move because you ended up getting Brian Thomas, a guy that many people had mocked to the Jaguars anyway. I think more people had possibly like Terrion Arnold, as I did, or Quinyon Mitchell, one of the other cornerbacks. But getting a Brian Thomas was logical because on a lot of people's boards, I think he was considered the next best receiver after the trio at the top. So, I think the Jaguars did really, really well. Probably their best pick in the whole draft. When you consider the round it was taken in, the value that on paper it looks like you got, and fulfilling a need because they needed not only another weapon for Trevor Lawrence, but somebody who could, you know, really get vertical and take the top off of defense. So first round, I'd say the Jaguars did exceptionally well.
Do you think more people were talking about the Thomas pick, or do you think more people were talking about Tony Khan wearing a neck brace to the draft?
Well, you're asking the wrong guy on that, because you know, I don't fall for skits like that. It's, you know, it's totally, in my opinion, it's totally bogus. It's fake. Yeah, you know, I get it. You're trying to promote a brand, and that's great. But you know, when he did the Harvey Weinstein comparison on NFL Network, that's kind of where he lost me. So I'm doing my best by staying totally away from that, regardless of how much people think it's cute or funny.
All right. Pulling the wig off of AEW wrestling is Gene Fernette.
I am. I've been pulling the wig off of all of wrestling since I was about old enough to realize it was all scripted.
All right. Well, let's look at the second round then. And here they get defensive tackle Mason Smith. Now, you know, they spell Duval with three U's. Well, he's Mason with two A's. Maybe he needs a third in there, but he's another LSU player. They get him at number 48. So, you know, talk a little bit about where he fits in, how you graded this pick, and if he'd contribute right away.
I graded this pick a B-. I mean, it's an okay pick. You know, that's all I felt about it. I mean, this is a guy that's had some injury issues, right, and just only started to get a little bit healthy toward the end of last year. And so, you know, from a torn ACL that he had at the start of the 2022 season. But yeah, I mean, I envision this guy as a guy that should get some snaps next year. And, you know, if you want this pick to be a hit, he's got to be a starter, I would say, by the 2025 season, possibly a replacement for Roy Robertson Harris. But, you know, Roy Robertson Harris, as you know, they just signed him to a new contract. So we'll have to see how that goes. But I mean, the whole attempt here is to get younger. You've got guys like, you know, you got Adam Gotsis on that D-line interior. You got Jeremiah Ledbetter. So you're trying to get younger here, and you're taking a chance on a guy who's got a lot of upside, but he's got to get healthy. And, you know, I didn't like this pick as much as I liked the Brian Thomas pick, but I don't dislike the pick, because the Jaguars did have to get more physical. Well, that's something that, you know, GM Trent Baalke emphasized heavily in his season-ending press conference. And the Jaguars most certainly did that in this draft. And, you know, and Mason Smith is certainly the start of that. But we'll see how things roll as time moves on. Because I still remember last year's draft liking a lot of the picks, particularly the third, fourth, fifth round picks. And they haven't had near the impact. So we're all guessing at this point. For right now, I'm a little bit lukewarm on Mason Smith, but I can certainly see the upside.
All right. Well, you mentioned those middle round picks, and the third round came up next. They had the number 96 pick, and this pick I actually really liked. They address a need here. They take Jerrion Jones from Florida State right down I-10 there. You know, he was certainly a star last year on that undefeated until bowl game Seminoles defense. You know, how did you like seeing him taken for corner there? And, you know, what do you think of Jones and what you've seen out of him?
Well, the two things that I liked the most. Number one, it's a corner. Okay, that was the Jaguars' biggest need to going into the draft. And I was if you'd have told me before the draft that they would have waited till the number 96 pick to address cornerback, that would have surprised me. But that's the way it fell. And I know that the Jaguars are excited about him as their nickel guy. I don't think they see him as a boundary corner. I think when the Jaguars line up in September 12th or whatever that week one season opener is going to be, you should be seeing Tyson Campbell. You should be Ronald Darby, the free agent, and you should be seeing Jerrion Jones. I mean, if he doesn't win the nickelback job, I'll be a little bit surprised. And I would question whether you hit on this pick if he could not win the nickelback job. If not, like for week one, at least by midseason. So, I like the fact that they finally did get a cornerback. I just wish they had done it earlier, but that doesn't mean that Jerrion Jones won't be a fine fit as a nickel.
Yeah, absolutely. Great athlete. And you're right. I think, you know, obviously he's going to get better as the season goes on. That's you know, a lot of pressure for a young guy like that. But we'll keep our eye on the Florida State guy. In the fourth round, they had two picks, and they were within just a couple of picks of each other. They were 114 and 116. Here they get a big offensive tackle in Javon Foster of Missouri and a defensive tackle, Jordan Jefferson, yet another LSU guy. So how did you like those picks, and what did you see about their fourth round there?
I liked Foster better than I liked Jefferson. And, you know, I guess part of the reason for that is that, you know, you look at what the tackle position is like for the Jaguars. You got Walker Little and Cam Robinson, who both could be free agents after this season. And so I think that it was imperative that the Jaguars go get some offensive tackle. And listen, Trent Baalke said it before the draft. He said, you can go get starters at tackle in this particular draft in the fourth and fifth round. That's exactly what he said. Well, that's what he's trying to do here. He went in the first pick in the fourth round. He went and got himself an offensive tackle. And, you know, and you got a guy whose dad spent 4 years in the NFL. So, you know, nothing wrong with having a pedigree of an NFL father, right, at any position. And then when you look at Jordan Jefferson, the defensive tackle from LSU, as the number 116 pick, well, you needed some depth there. You know, again, another chance to get a little bit more physical on the inside. And you know, I just think that you know, that again was a necessary thing for the Jags to do. But in the course of this, though, the one thing that the Jaguars did not get, which kind of, you know, in hindsight surprised me a little bit, they didn't go and They didn't get an edge rusher in this draft, which is kind of a little bit stunning. Now that doesn't mean that Mason Smith or even I don't know about Jefferson, but they might not occasionally line up on the edge, but they're mostly defensive tackles. That's what they are. And the Jaguars went and you know, they've got the relationship, right? You've got an inside linebackers coach, Matt House, who was the defensive coordinator at LSU for the past 2 years. So he has intimate knowledge of both Mason Smith and Jordan Jefferson. And you have to believe that the Jaguars aren't taking these two guys if there's not a strong endorsement from Matt House. So they have the advantage of having some intel there that maybe other teams don't have.
All right. Well, moving on to the fifth round. Again, they had two picks here, 153 and 167. One of those, that 167 was because of that earlier trade. They take another corner here, DeAndre Prince of Ole Miss. They also took a running back in Keelan Robinson of Texas. Now, they took a running back last year in Tank Bigsby. They took a running back the year before in Snoop Connor. You've got Travis Etienne. Were you a little surprised that they went running back there? Did you think that that was a good choice? And tell us a little bit about DeAndre Prince, the other corner that they selected.
Well, addressing the running back situation first, Keelan Robinson is not going to get many snaps at running back. He's a special teams. They drafted him to be a return guy. That's going to be his role on this team. I'd be stunned if he got much in the way of, you know, of carries. I mean, he only had 12 carries all of last year for Texas. Now, granted, he scored three touchdowns on 12 of those carries, and he had like about an 11.2 average. But when you have only 12 carries, you know, whatever your number is not going to be, that's too small of a sample size to judge him. But point being, Texas only trusted him to carry the ball 12 times last year. So that tells me that, you know, his role for the Jaguars is going to be possibly as a return guy, maybe possibly even a gunner. So, I mean, he's drafted specifically for special teams. DeAndre Prince, the cornerback from Ole Miss, that was taken at number 153. You know, this is another guy. This is a guy that probably fits the kind of scheme that defensive coordinator Ryan Nielsen wants to play. He wants to play press man coverage, and DeAndre Prince specializes in that. And unfortunately for DeAndre, there was one instance where he was in press man coverage last year, and Brian Thomas beat him for a touchdown in the LSU Ole Miss game. In fact, we had a picture of image of that in today's Times Union. So, yeah, again, your Prince is not only a guy that I see having a future role as a corner with the Jaguars, part-time role as a corner, but I see him also as a guy that can help on special teams as well. I mean, I think it's about, listen, it's about getting the Jaguars wanting to get faster too, and Prince is a guy that's going to give you that. So you know, the thing is, the Jaguars with the new kickoff rules next year, you're going to need more key players, in my opinion, as part of your core, meaning guys that are going to be playing on all four special teams, you know, punt coverage, kick coverage, return, and both. And I think it's more of a priority for teams now with these new rules. And I think the drafting of Prince and Keelan Robinson was certainly something that was designed with that in mind.
Yeah, certainly. And now we get to the last round where you've got Miles Cole selected, seventh round pick at 236. You know, he's a guy that, you know, might be able to eventually play edge rusher. You had mentioned edge earlier. You know, you've got Trayvon Walker, who was the number one pick a couple of years ago. You've got Josh Allen, who just signed that Herculean deal. So, you know, tell us a little bit about Miles Cole out of Texas Tech. And do you even expect to see him? Is he a practice squad guy? And what did you think of that pick?
Yeah, I mean, listen, once you get to the seventh round, I mean, you're throwing darts at a board, right? But yeah, listen, the fact that he's 6'6", 278, don't know if he's, you know, even though he did play some edge last year after being inside most of his career at Texas Tech, you know, is he somebody that could be an edge rusher? Yeah, I guess eventually, but I see him more as a developmental guy. And, you know, I think if he just can get on the practice squad this coming year, that'll be a win for him, being a seventh round pick. So that is totally a developmental pick, and we'll see if you get anything out of it. If this guy becomes a rotational pass rusher in 2 or 3 years, then this will be a very, very good draft pick. But for now, he should just concentrate on trying to, you know, win a practice squad, at least get on the practice squad, and see where it goes from there. I really like the Cam Little pick, the kicker from Arkansas. Even though the Jaguars have two kickers on their roster with NFL experience in Riley Patterson and Joey Sly, I like this pick because, well, number one, it's sixth round. That's number one. And number two, 12. I mean, that's not a huge investment. But this is a guy that's got a big-time leg. I think he made something like 12 field goals beyond 50 yards in his career. I might be wrong about that, but I'm sorry, 7 field goals of 50 plus yards in his career at Arkansas. You know, first team all SEC guy. And keep this in mind too. The Jaguars, you know, drafted 6 SEC players out of 9, which is, you know, only the 6th time in NFL history that any team has drafted at least 6 SEC players in one draft. Okay. But at positions like kicker, right, it doesn't matter whether you've kicked all these great field goals. It doesn't matter whether you did it in the SEC or whether you did it in Division III. Kicker, punter, and long snapper are the only positions where it doesn't matter what level that you did it at. Okay, all the other positions, you know, it's always better if you did it at the highest level, SEC, you know, or Power 5 conference or whatever. But I like the Cam Little pick because I wanted to see more competition there at kicker, because the two kickers they've got are guys that have been rejected also by the NFL, right? Riley Patterson was ushered out of Jacksonville, even though he had a pretty good year 2 years ago, because they wanted Brandon McManus. And now they've taken Brandon McManus, ushered him out, brought Riley Patterson back, and also brought Joey Sly in, who also kicked for the Commanders. But I like having the competition at kicker, because you know, when it comes to the kicker position, that could be 2 or 3 wins or 2 or 3 L's added to your schedule every year, because a lot of games are decided by field goals, and you want to be able to get the best guy there at that position. And that's why I like having Cam Little there, bringing him in for competition with Patterson and Joey Sly.
Yeah, and I'm glad you mentioned him, because I accidentally blew right by him in my rundown, but I was going to mention him because I do love this guy's confidence, and you're right, his numbers are incredible. In his college career, he made all 129 extra points that he took, and field goals, he was 53 of 64. But what I love is the confidence of his quote, where he says, "I smashed the workout, did what I needed to do, and they took a chance on me in the draft today. I promise you that they will not regret that. The city of Jacksonville will not regret that pick. So there's a young man who definitely not short on confidence, I would say, Gene.
Well, I'm going to tell you, I'm going to share a little draft story about confidence, right, on when it comes to your first conference call with the media. Back in, I think it was 2011, the Jaguars drafted an offensive tackle by the name of Evan Britton from Arizona. And unfortunately for him at the time, he obviously had had a few too many beers or some type of libation. And he he made all kinds of promises on that, you know, that he was going to, you know, be part of a Super Bowl champion, and the Jaguars were getting the best of the best when they got him. And I think he stayed around 2 years. So I'm always cautious when guys go on right away with no relationship, where your first impression you lay out is all this bravado you have. You know, it's great for the media in terms of quotes, and it's a fun thing. But I'm always leery of a guy who does that, because I think it's always better to have your, you know, have your confidence be a little bit more, a little bit less not being put publicly out there.
Yeah, I agree with you fully. So overall, how would you rate the Jaguars draft here for 2024?
I gave it a B. It looks to me like it's a solid draft. I don't know that it's a 2016 draft where the Jaguars had, you know, Jalen Ramsey, Miles Jack, and Yannick Ngakoue right out of the chute. Now, even though two of those guys forced their way out of town, they were from a talent standpoint and a production standpoint, that's probably one of the best drafts the Jaguars have ever had at the top of the board. It remains to be seen on this one. Like I said, I think it looks solid. It could potentially be a lot more than solid. But again, you know, I thought last year's draft, I thought the Jaguars satisfied a lot of needs, but they didn't necessarily correctly identify the right players. And so you can fill a need, but if you don't correctly identify the player, then it doesn't matter. So we'll see. I like what they did. I think it's a very solid draft. But again, until they get on the field and we see what happens, you know, it's pretty good for now. Hopefully come this time next year, it'll be looking a lot better.
All righty. And, you know, for people who do look down at what the Jaguars did in the draft, they'll notice next to the names, a lot of SEC schools. And this is something that you wrote about this past weekend, Gene, is how the Jags went SEC heavy, where there was a time in the past where they weren't so much so. So tell us a little bit about your column and just the importance of taking, you know, the SEC is the best conference. Why wouldn't you want to take players from there?
Yeah, so there was 59 SEC players that were taken in this draft this year, which is identical to the average for the last decade. They've averaged 59 players. The next best conference, the Big Ten, averaged only 43. So obviously, there's the SEC is not only the best conference year in, year out, in terms of the national championships that they win, in terms of the draft picks. They continually, this is the 18th year in a row, the SEC has had more draft picks than anybody else. And that streak's never going to stop, by the way. Now that Texas and Oklahoma are coming into the league next year, I don't think the SEC streak of 18 in a row is going to stop for maybe, it may go on another 18 more years in a row. I mean, that's just the way it is. And the main reason why the SEC is regarded as the better league is I just think they have faster, more physical players on defense. Then I think that's where their biggest advantage lies. The SEC, then that, and all the money that these SEC programs pour in too, and so they're going to continue to get the best players because they're going to have the most NIL money as well. But yes, I mean, the Jaguars, compared to where they were 10, 12 years ago, the last year that Gene Smith was the general manager, when the Jaguars went to training camp in 2012, of the 90 players they went to camp with, only three were SEC players. Three out of 90 were in 2012 training camp for the Jaguars. Right now, the Jaguars, well, of course, you got to add all the undrafted guys. I don't know what that count was. But anyway, before they signed their undrafted free agents Sunday night, the Jaguars had 26 SEC players out of 79. That's 33%. from the SEC. So obviously the Jaguars are more SEC heavy than they've ever been. Now, just because you're SEC heavy, that doesn't guarantee anything, right? You got to pick the right SEC players. And the Jaguars in the last decade have been, you know, hit or miss in terms of the SEC players they've taken. They've had, I believe, in the last 11 years, less than half success rate on taking SEC players in the draft. So, you know, it's not just that you pick from the SEC, it's that you've got to identify the right SEC players. But you know what? If you're gonna take a chance on players from certain leagues, certain conferences, you could certainly do worse than the SEC. And I think I just think your percentages go up a little bit when you have SEC talent than if you have talent from either smaller schools or, you know, talent maybe from, like, well, let's say the Big 12, ACC, things like that.
All righty, absolutely agreed. Give them SEC players a chance. So, Gene, how much better are the Jaguars today than they were at this time last week?
If I was to put a percentage on it, you know, hopefully, you know, again, this might be a little bit optimistic, but you're hoping they're, you know, 15, 20% better, right? Because if you're not 15, 20% better, you're going to get passed, because guess what? The Houston Texans got better. The Indianapolis Colts got better. Everybody got better. It's just a question as to what level they're getting better. I mean, if you don't get better after you've had, you know, 9 draft picks, then something's wrong. You know, the Jaguars got better. It's just a question as to what level, and how does that improvement compare to the people that you're competing against, specifically the 3 teams in your AFC South division. You know that, you know, and you got to add the free agency to that as well. So, you know, I think when you combine free agency and the draft, I think that on paper, I think the Jaguars did very well. But you know what? I also think the Houston Texans did great. Particularly in free agency. Same thing for the Tennessee Titans, right? And the Indianapolis Colts basically kind of re-signed their own. But you know, I also like what with some of the AFC South teams did in the draft as well. So everybody's getting better. It's just a question of how much better are you getting, and can this new coaching staff, particularly on the defensive side of the ball, get better mileage out of the players this year than Mike Caldwell and his staff got last year? So we're going to see. But again, everything looks great in April. All right. There's no negativity in April for anybody, you know, and then the reality of September, October, November, December hit, and it either is better or it's worse. But I do like the Jaguars' chances next year of getting back to the postseason, whether it's as a division champion or as a wild card team. I think that's kind of a 50-50 coin flip.
All righty. Anything else you want to add about the 2024 NFL draft, Gene?
Not so much about the draft, but maybe a little bit of excitement coming up for Jaguars fans. I believe by the end of this week, you will see an announcement from the NFL on the international series, specifically who they're playing. They're going to be playing 2 games in October. They're going to be playing in back-to-back weeks. They're going to play the Bears at Tottenham Hotspur as the away team, and they're going to probably host a game. They're going to host a game at Wembley against the Cleveland Browns or New England Patriots. And my guess is that game might be the second game this year instead of the first game. Last year it was Wembley first, then Tottenham Hotspur. My guess is those two will be flipped this year. And of course, and next week, I'm hearing that the NFL schedule may be coming out on Thursday, May the 9th. So that may be something else for NFL fans, specifically Jaguar fans, to look forward to as well.
All righty. That's great stuff, Gene. And again, you broke that news last week just before the draft started about the Jaguars playing 2 again in London. So we'll be looking for your reporting on that, and we appreciate that. You can read all of Gene's work at jacksonville.com. You can follow him on Twitter, X, at Gene Frenette. That's GeneFrenette. And Gene, it's always a pleasure. I appreciate you being here and giving us all your great knowledge.
Good to be with you, Tim.
And that will do it for another episode of the State of Florida Sports Podcast. I'm Tim Walters, and to quote the Jaguars' only Hall of Famer, Tony Boselli, you can't be a good leader without good character. Will you be a good leader by joining me again next time?
Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.